This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the Wednesday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, in Cleveland, Ohio. Jensen, how were things last night in your neck of the woods? Things got dicey here on the Tennessee and Kentucky border, but we're back up and in business and we have power.
Smoke has cleared. Rain has come down, and hopefully we're going to have a lot of day baseball today. Very excited about that. I should be a part-time meteorologist, as I predicted to you yesterday. We would not be playing in Boston or in the Bronx. We did get it in Philadelphia, albeit the end of that game will not be in addition to the Tom Emanski video for defensive specialties, or at least base running specialties, we shall say. But yeah, good to be back. Hump day. Happy hump day to all those who celebrate. We're halfway through the year, man, and we are just weeks away from football getting underway. So let's rock and roll. Let's have a great day.
JT Realmuto, you're going the wrong way. Very bizarre ending to that game. But you mentioned the rains. That's the only thing that can slow down the Red Sox. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
It did kind of feel like it was right out of Bull Durham. And for all of you older baseball heads out there, you know, sometimes, Jensen, when things are going too good for one team or too bad for another, you need an old-fashioned rainout. And that's what the Red Sox did, the only thing that could stop them for trying to go for a franchise record 15th straight win. So the rains come yesterday to halt that winning streak. I wonder, Jensen, you know those guys are itching to get out there. They're like, oh, rain be damned. We don't want to stop and slow down this train at all. Maybe that's what the rest of the American League East needed, was the Red Sox just to cool off for a day.
Yeah, it'll be day-night doubleheader at Fenway Park. Again, 1:35 first pitch. It'll be Dean Kramer against Jake Bennett. We know it's Kyle Bradish who will get the start for Baltimore in the nightcap. Boston undecided on what they want to do. Same thing will happen in the Bronx. Day-night double dip, Pittsburgh and New York. Mitch Keller, Gerrit Cole in game one. And welcome back, Max Fried. Man, you want to talk about a sight for sore eyes. The Yankees needing to try and get some stars back. That'll be great to see. He will be activated for that nightcap. And right now, it does look like it's going to be Bubba Chandler against Max Fried. So a couple of day-night double dips with some serious implications there in the American League East.
Yeah, speaking of maybe just watching the show yesterday, I think San Diego heard me, and I told you they might be a surprise candidate for me going forward if they could get the offense pointed in the right direction. Well, all of a sudden, did they get that going yesterday? 8-3 winners for the Padres. Manny Machado goes yard twice, and Jackson Merrill goes yard, and Fernando Tatis Jr., Jensen, had the longest home run of the Major League Baseball season. A guy who hasn't been able to hit for power hits the longest bomb of them all yesterday. Maybe that's exactly what they needed. And you mentioned the Dodgers, a wild win 2-1 yesterday in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I happened to be watching the Tatis Jr. homer live. And for any of those walking in the outfield concourse, duck and cover, because that one was incoming big time. We talked about how we wanted to zig when others were zagging yesterday, and I completely understood why people wanted to back Zach Wheeler at home. He's been a force to be reckoned with. But as Mark Jackson would say, mama, there goes that man. Max Muncy, the eventual and game-winning two-run homer, his third career off of Wheeler. That's all she wrote, unless you watched the ninth inning where you thought the Phillies might steal this one.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll talk much more coming up about just a base-running blunder for the ages, and one that the Dodgers will certainly take. With the Brewers losing yesterday, Dave, and the Dodgers winning, Dodgers now back with the best record in all of baseball.
Rangers, we had some blowouts there yesterday as well. They absolutely rout the White Sox 10-0. How about the Rays and the Jays? And again, me, you, and Will Hill were talking about this one a little bit for the Jays. It kind of feels like you saw it on social media, too, with a lot of Blue Jay faithful, that maybe, not that this is the end of the road, but boy, it's what a difference a year makes here for the Jays. They get crushed 12-2 by the Rays. So kind of a good flip for Tampa Bay to get back in the good foot, but Toronto just can't seem to get out of their own way.
This is going to be a stick in the fork. I told you so yesterday in looking at where Toronto was. I know you had asked me, and I said this offense nowhere even close to what we saw and what it resembled last year en route to the American League pennant. So I would say, Dave, unless something drastically changes next week, they're going to start taking calls, especially about Kevin Gausman. We'll talk about a little stock up, stock down as far as the trade market is concerned later on in the show. But well, it's kind of sad in a way because we have a lot of people that tune us in at Rogers Sportsnet north of the border every day. It is Canada's team. And it is just such a different feel for this group. Hard to replicate some of the storied, you know, years and career years that guys had. But, man, felt they would be much more competitive than what they are here in 2026.
And Vlad Guerrero not having a great year. We know that as well. Yeah. So I don't know if it's as simple as Bo Bichette being in New York, but something does feel amiss there. And, yeah, you could see a dismantling coming from a team oh so close to winning the World Series just a year ago. Those media days continue down there in Tampa, Florida for the SEC. Alabama, Florida, Ole Miss, Texas A&M going to take to the podium today. Interesting yesterday with some of the guys that were up there, like Shane Bieber. Of course, I was very interested in what he had to say with South Carolina. Jensen, that is some of the news, but there is also much bigger news coming out of the SEC. We've talked a little bit about on this program about maybe the SEC trying to leave the NCAA. So, again, a rumor is a rumor if it doesn't die. And it feels like this rumor continues here. What do you make of it? And, again, as we alluded to, I don't know that they can go alone, but it feels like it's picking up some traction.
I say top 10 headline here for John Lund, doing a great job filling in for Joe Friso this week, producing with he and PJ Glasser. Seceding, like SEC-ding from the NCC, the NCAA. Dave, we remember our history in this country that the Civil War did, and ironic that the South is looking to secede from the union here, known as the NCAA. A lot of comments and saw a lot of people giving their takes yesterday. And as I told you, Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC, feels like Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars, where some other people are looking at it as though they're going to do their own thing. So anxious to see where it goes here. But be honest, what are they going to secede for? They are 0-3 in the last three national champions. The Big Ten is King Kong right now. So they got a lot of work to do on their own end. It might just mean more to them, Dave, but when it comes down to it, we hand out trophies for a reason at the end of the year. And with the Big Ten, a trifecta of a trump card right now on the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what they are, what they would plan to do if they did go it alone and how that would look. We know it's all about TV contracts. That's certainly first and foremost. So it'll be very interesting if they try to do this and what leverage play they're actually trying to get done there. Boy, we saw the numbers come out in football, not our American football, but the world's football on the world stage this week. Nets the largest audience since the 1994 Olympics. So I don't know if this is just an every 4 year sport. I've been around long enough to see them try to do this after World Cups in the past. Hasn't always taken off. I wonder, Jensen, if this time in post World Cup 2026, if it's going to be different going forward in the United States.
Well, what's great about it is that it is going to help out so many of these local programs as far as American soccer is concerned, because so many people were very enthralled with it, whether you're a casual fan, whether you've never seen it. Celebrities that we haven't seen for years end up coming out for some of these games coast to coast. And so it really captured the imagination of so many of the fans here. And we're used to seeing that kind of a number, Dave, around what, AFC, NFC Championship. For people scoring at home about half of what the Super Bowl is year in and year out in this country. So pretty remarkable. And I'm sure advertisers there, you know, who's really happy this morning, FIFA and Fox, because of all the advertising money that they get to kind of go back through and say, yeah, you kind of like soccer in this country? Well, go ahead. You're going to pay up to put your 30-second advertisements when we come back here in 2030.
Yeah, I'd like to see, because, again, it's got to start at that grassroots, right, in order for the next generation to come up. And I felt like we've been close in decades past, and it hasn't really got home. Maybe this will get some of these American players to stay and play a little bit more soccer instead of switching over to more popular sports like basketball. Steph Curry could probably do whatever he wanted in any sport. That's how talented he is. We know what a great golfer he is. How about this? This is a first-timer. Steph Curry becomes the first active player in the NBA to have his own exhibit in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Now, remember, this isn't the NBA Hall of Fame. This is the Basketball Hall of Fame. So it encompasses everything, Jensen. And I was talking with a buddy of mine, and I made this point that I do think you can make a case that Steph Curry has changed the game as much as any player, at least in my generation. If you want to go back a couple, you could talk about Will Chamberlain. But, Jensen, he has changed the game forever with the three-point shot. And I can understand why they said, you know, we're not going to wait for him to call it a career. Let's give him an exhibit right now.
Well, I remember the oversized jersey that he wore at Davidson. We watched him through the NCAA tournament. Back when you had the baggy shorts, Dave, in basketball. And it was then we saw a guy who was just a sharpshooter for the ages. You mentioned it, really transitioning the NBA into a perimeter-oriented and very much chuck-it-up three kind of game in and game out pace. For what it's worth, too, on the heels of that, because we know Steph Curry and the rest of the NBA waiting to see where a potential teammate could come in here. I don't know if you saw it yesterday. The Miami Heat social media department may have leaked a July 27th news conference or video that LeBron James may be taking his talents back to South Beach. Checking prediction markets this morning, Dave, about a 49% chance Miami Heat will be the next destination for LeBron James. Cleveland is down to 29%, Golden State at 13%. As we are on LeBron watch, some of us are on LeBron watch, many of us are not.
I'll say this about Steph. Back in his Davidson days, they played a little school called Georgetown. And one of my guys that I work with covered that. I had to cover Bruce Pearl down there in American University. We saw what Davidson did to Georgetown. Not a good memory for the people back up there for Hoya Nation. When we come back, what do we see in Major League Baseball? What an ending in Philadelphia. How did that transpire? It's all next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. The NFL preseason is only a couple of weeks away. The best bettors are already being prepared for it, and you can be too. Lock in that early bird pricing in our football special for just $175 before the price goes up next month. You're going to get instant access to our 2026 and 2027 NFL betting guide, plus our upcoming college football betting guide, giving you everything you need to attack those futures, win totals, conference races, and the upcoming season before kickoff even begins. The sooner you sign up, the more value you will get. With full VSiN Pro access to everything we do across every major sport through the Super Bowl in February, that includes our daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Continuing this Wednesday edition of VSiN by the Books, going to have JVT join the program a little bit later on in this fine hour, and also Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, Yes Golf. It continues with the 3M Open. I know it's not as sexy as, say, the British Open, but hopefully some value that we can find for you in the board. I'll give you a couple players that we want to watch, and I know Jensen's going to bet his build as well today. But let's get back to Major League Baseball. Some wild results we saw. But again, the Red Sox did not play very quickly, Jensen. I don't know if you've been a part of a winning skid like our streak like that. Losing skid, sometimes you want the day off. Does that slow down anything for Boston with that day off yesterday?
Probably not, and it really all that does is reset kind of where the rotations are. And remember, Baltimore had won seven straight before the loss on Monday to get Boston into that 14-game win streak. So we'll kind of see where it happens. I'm sure a little scoreboard watching yesterday. Not excited to see the Rays just go out and pummel the Blue Jays the way they did 12-2. I got to say, this is a Rays team that's had to deal with some punches here. They have rebounded in kind, and I think they got to feel a little bit better about themselves getting healthy north of the border. What you like, too, about Tampa Bay is they'll have today and tomorrow to finish up against the Blue Jays, then back home for their longest homestand of the year, and it'll be a critical one. Cleveland for three, the Rangers for three, and then the White Sox come in. So it is a massive playoff implication homestand for Tampa Bay. They have had, obviously, Caminero doing what he has done, but I think they have needed to find a little bit more footing offensively. They've certainly done that in these first handful of games.
I've got some futures tickets tied with the Yankees to win this division. They are even money to do so, but I'm wondering, almost as a safeguard, if you will, you can still get the Rays right now plus $1.25. Again, we've talked a lot about the Red Sox, obviously, with this hot win streak getting inside of single digits at 9-1. Very quickly, you know, and again, I've seen some people that I trust that actually believe the Rays are the best team in the American League, and that when you're getting that kind of value right now at plus money just to win the division, that even if you've got some other tickets on the other side, you might be able to hedge or at least safeguard that bet if you think Tampa Bay is going to hold on and win this division. Where are you on Tampa at that price point?
I don't know if they're the best team in the league. There's definitely some shortcomings. And I think offensively, the back half of their order definitely concerns me headed into a postseason series. Now, they have already said that they're going to be aggressive at the deadline. What does that mean? Is that a middle of the order bat? Is it a, you know, an outfielder that can hit? You know, particularly you look at right field, and because they are so left-handed heavy, a right-handed hitting outfielder with some pop would be great. Insert Taylor Ward here. That would be wonderful for them. The back end of their bullpen has been good. They could always use an extra leverage arm, and many of the contenders will go shopping for that. As far as winning the division, I've kind of cooled a little bit on where I want to go here, and I would rather pivot more so towards looking at, because the American League is wide open, looking at some of the American League futures. And that to me would be the way that I would, Dave, want to attack where the Rays are. Make no mistake about it. If you think that the Yankees are going to come back and win this division, even money, go right ahead. I'm not as concerned with that. I think the 550, the plus 550 on the Rays, if you want to kind of maximize, I would rather go there, because as it stands, Dave, it looks like the winner of the American League East is going to get one of those top two seeds. And therein lies the opportunity with home field advantage. All you got to do is win one series to get into a position to monetize if that is your choice. So I hope they are aggressive. They have the best home record, not only in the American League, Dave, but in all of baseball at 35-15. So home field advantage, crucial for Tampa Bay in their road potentially to the World Series.
If you watch those, Tom Emanski videos growing up, and I think we all saw those commercials, or Fred McGriff and those commercials back in the day with
back
some fundamentals,
back,
they were lacking. Very good. They were lacking, Jensen, last night with the Phillies. The ending of that game, base running. Boy, I've seen some bad base running. Mets had some yesterday in a win as well. But still, that base running blunder that we saw at the end of that game where you got, second and third, one out, and a ball hit on the left side, and you come halfway down the line and stop. It cost the Phillies a game as the Dodgers get that win 2-1, which is good news for you, because I know you had the Dodgers yesterday. But boy, was that an instructional video of how not to run the bases in the ninth inning?
Yeah, it definitely was. And again, when you look at it, was really well pitched, you know, by both sides. Max Muncy had the two-run homer. Robleski, as we said, we kind of like this situational spot.
Yeah.
Being able to neutralize some of the left-handed power bats. And as you said, Philly ran themselves out of the potential winning rally. Just your ho-hum, Dave, 5-2-6-4 double play to end the game. And one that I think Philly will look back and say, come on, guys. And if it was rookies, it's one thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those spots, too, where if you're JT Realmuto, you know that you're the winning run. Like, you've got to be very, very careful. And all of a sudden, you know, he ends up getting thrown out trying to retreat to second base. So an unfortunate break for the Phillies, a fortunate one for the Dodgers, and one that they will certainly take.
You know, we talked a little bit about this yesterday in the program here with Chase Burns, and we mentioned in Cy Young, if you're looking for still a longer shot type player to go play if you didn't have a ticket already in pocket at 20, 30 to 1 when the numbers were better. Down to 10 to 1 before that start last night against Seattle. I did play first five, as we talked about in the program yesterday. And that under easily gets home as well. Jensen, he only went five, and then they pulled him there. Is this what we can expect? Because I think when you're looking, and he was dynamic, by the way, in this 4-2 win for the Reds over Seattle. Is this something for those guys, the younger guys, the Mizzes, the Burns, that when we're looking in those markets, we have to start looking at the way that the usage is going to be? Now, we know the Brewers are going to be a playoff team. We obviously don't believe the Reds are. He did get over 90 pitches yesterday. Is that just something they're going to monitor? And the game is almost, it's not even dependent on what's going on in the game. It's more about the number of pitches he's going to have.
He went 91 pitches in five innings, and I'll pull up and see where his season high is real quick. By the way, great job by you to forego wanting to sweat out the Cincinnati Red bullpen, which has been a horror movie for many people. It's like that's probably the way to go moving forward. But if you look at where Chase Burns has been, Dave, he has thrown 100 pitches or more three times this year. And ironically, his previous start, and of course that was before the All-Star break, he threw 106 pitches at home against the Philadelphia Phillies. Only two prior times, June 15th at home against the Mets, and then back-to-back starts would have been June 9th in San Diego, 100 and 105 pitches respectively. So in not watching the entirety of the outing, it could have been how he got there, where there were some arduous innings. He only had two walks. So nothing really jumps out from a, okay, you know, this is a workload management thing. It feels pretty in line with where they've treated him thus far. And I would also say too, Dave, when you have extended rest like this with younger pitchers, knowing how many days you had in between starts, this is probably more predicated on, you know, the usual turn through the rotation. It was extended, so you don't want to push a guy. I know people are like, well, that doesn't make sense. You had all the extra rest. Not the case. It's more routine-based. So I would fully expect that if he's through 5 and 90, let's say, in his next start, he's probably going back out for the sixth inning.
Very interesting. 20-1 right now in the market to win Cy Young, even after a five-inning display that he put on yesterday in Seattle. It looked really good, so we'll monitor that going forward. Interesting to see the changing numbers there. By the way, very quickly, I'm starting to get nervy about those Fighting Fish. Another loss. Oh, Jordan Alvarez, Jensen. If they don't move Jordan Alvarez, he's going to win the MVP, isn't he, in the American League?
Oh, man, the way that he's going right now, and it was just checking some numbers in that MVP market. Remember, before the All-Star break, Dave, he was minus $1.65. He is up to minus $2.70. We are getting into a little Aaron Judge territory of years past when you're starting to see that. He wins a Triple Crown, go ahead and book it. As long as he's on an American League team, it won't matter. But boy, what a performance he has had so far this season, no question about it.
And again, I don't want to say that management, that it's not their responsibility to keep him there in the American League to get that Triple Crown, but boy, it would be a shame if he got traded to the National League and that was then was not up for one of the hardest things to do in any sport, let alone Major League Baseball, but to win that Triple Crown. So you'd like to see him get the opportunity, but you know that a deal might do some talking there. We're going to talk with Jonathan Von Tobel next to see what's on his mind. JVT is up right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Wednesday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you to have our Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds is going to join the program a little bit later on. This morning, talking some golf. We also look forward to our conversations every Wednesday with JVT, kind enough to get up early with us here out there in Las Vegas. Of course, does a great job with Stormy Bonatoni on Money Moves, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, daily here on the network, and co-host of Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss, and joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. JVT, good morning to you, sir. We were just talking a little Cy Young, and in the National League, we're talking a little Chase Burns after another good performance, yet he's 20-1, which feels a little long for me in the National League. In the American League, you had one of your viewers, I believe, that had a very interesting name out there, maybe in a long shot variety. What number and name do you think might be playable at this point?
Yeah, Sonny Gray at 17-1 was brought up to us for the American League Cy Young. And, you know, look, he's got the surface level stats. He's got the sub-2.5 ERA. But I do think, too, what's going to be interesting is his role here in this resurgence for this Red Sox team, right? I mean, they're on this insane run right now in terms of a winning streak. And, you know, guys, I'll remind you, I brought this up on the podcast because, you know, sometimes voters like narratives. Go back to, I believe it was June 18th. Sonny Gray goes out there, gives him 7 innings, gives up 3 earned runs. They lose to the Toronto Blue Jays. It was part of the last of a 4-game losing streak for Boston at the time. And he comes out after the game and says, yeah, we suck. We're a bad team. He says it flat out, says we're not good. Then they go on this run where they have won now, I think it is 22 of 27 games, whatever they're on right now. And of course, their winning streak that they are currently active. And he was asked again the other day, not like a gotcha, but about the comments. And he said, yeah, like we weren't a good team. And to be a leader of sorts in that regard, to call a team out onto the carpet after a loss like that, but then back it up with the way that you're pitching and be part of a pitching staff that has been amongst the best of Major League Baseball, specifically over this run. It's hard to turn it away because I think in the Cy Young race in the American League, there's not a horse at the top that seemingly was ahead of the pack. We could talk about Mizorowski here in a second. But I think that there is enough upper mobility with the way that Sonny Gray has been pitching that he is going to be able to find his way into this mix. And in the race in the range of 17-1, I thought that was a good audience suggestion too. So Sonny Gray in the American League Cy Young race, I think is definitely worth looking at.
Also, great to see that. I know you grabbed the Red Sox to make the postseason upwards of 6-1. They currently sit here minus $1.80 on DraftKings to be in the tournament. So a nice little CLV for you, at least in these last couple of weeks. Speaking of, you mentioned the Miz, and it was something I brought up to Dave about workload with Cam Schlittler early in the year, because if the Yankees go where they want to go, they're going to monitor those innings, and it is a pretty steep increase year over year. That's where the Brewers are right now. And the Miz exiting his first start after the All-Star break, not because of an arm issue, but it is that workload thought. After four innings, he has really cascaded down here. It was upwards of a $5 favorite before the All-Star break, down to minus -280. Some opportunities for you to strike here. JVT, I know you've been a big fan of Zach Wheeler. Anyone else that you like in that market right now?
Yeah, you guys brought him up, and I think the troubling part about the recent stretch for Chase Burns outside of last night was in the three starts prior, he had an ERA over 5. He'd kind of been scuffling around, hadn't really been putting up the same thing, the same numbers. In fact, the three previous starts before last night, his strikeout rate was down like 21%. Walk rate was upwards of like 12%. So he put together some rough performances. But I think Burns has the pedigree to keep this going here for Cincinnati and to be pretty dominant and force his way back into the race. So I think you've hit on the two names. I think it's going to be Wheeler. I think it's going to be Burns. You know, Wheeler, I think everybody in the network has talked about at some point. So, you know, that I don't want to say the ship has sailed because at 8-1, I think that's still relatively playable. Look around, spots like FanDuel a little bit more inflated on Wheeler. You could have gotten him as high as a 17-1 going into yesterday too. So, or excuse me, 14-1. So if you were paying attention, you could have gotten that. But I think it's those two. Look, Sanchez, you even include the inning that he pitched in the All-Star game. My man's all over the place. The other day, he's really kind of got to work through his start. It wasn't horrible, but still, it took him, 99 pitches to get through 5 innings or something like that? So he's kind of working through whatever he is at this point. And if what we're hearing from Mizorowski is true, and you just don't like the comments from Pat Murphy the other day, right? You know, concerning, legs not underneath him, all those sort of things. They want to make sure that he's ready to go. And I think that does open the door for some of these guys to get back into this. I don't trust Sale because of the injuries, but I do think Wheeler of those two is probably the strongest, only because you're now probably looking at not a lifetime achievement award, but for a guy, the pedigree of Wheeler, who has pitched as well as he has and is continuing to do what he has done, for the writers to maybe do the Victor Wembanyama thing where it's like, you know, we're going to have plenty of opportunity to give Jacob Mizorowski a Cy Young award throughout his career. For Wheeler, though, he has got the resume, and that might be one of the worst decisions post a career if he never wins one Cy Young. So let's give it to him this year. So I think Wheeler is going to be the guy.
Yeah, and Zach feels like he's pitching it with a chip on his shoulder. We know about the All-Star game and not being there in Philadelphia. And so he definitely feels like he's got the motivation here to shove in the rest of the second half as well. We're going to talk a lot more about the SEC coming up here later on in the program today. Jonathan, I know you and Stormy will as well. Media days continue, and maybe they really are going to secede. I don't know if they're going to do that from the NCAA. But Kirby Smart in Georgia, I know you've got your eyes on them. And when you're looking maybe for a Heisman Trophy, this is the year the quarterback says Tim Murray seemed to agree with him when you look at it in the surface here with all these great quarterbacks. What is it about Gunner that you think would give him the opportunity possibly to win that award?
Well, first off, look, he is a quarterback, as you mentioned. I didn't realize, because I'm writing up the SEC for a college guide, we'll use the word clutch, how clutch Gunner Stockton was for this team a season ago. You sort his numbers, guys, by just the fourth quarter. He completed 85.6% of his passes. He had averaged 8.5 yards per attempt. He scored a total of nine touchdowns. I can speak, I promise. He totaled nine touchdowns in fourth quarter games yesterday, last year as well. And I think one of the most interesting dynamics is when you look at Georgia, the Bulldogs finished in the 79th percentile in late down success rate, despite the fact that they were in the 56th percentile in early down success rate. So translate is Gunner Stockton bailed him out on a lot of long third downs and kept them going in these fourth quarters of these games. He was really strong for them a season ago. And I don't think people remember, too. I shouldn't say that. People do. This defense was not as good, especially from a pass defense standpoint last year. They only totaled 20 sacks. They were a team that really scuffled in that regard, too. They should be better, although some of the transfer portal additions they brought in, the kid from Auburn tore his ACL in the summer to help in the pass rush, so they're really relying on some young dudes there. But if Stockton continues to improve, because Kirby Smart brought this up at media availability, last year was his first go at it, right? He has like two, I think the way Kirby Smart put it, like he was just 1-1 going into last year. And I think that Stockton, given the improvements that we expect year to year from quarterbacks like this, how good he was a season ago and how good Georgia can be this season at 20-1, I think there's far worse bets to be made for a guy to win a Heisman. And so I'm going to add Gunner Stockton to win the Heisman here. It's going to be one of my few. And remember, too, for the Heisman, you could take some shots. Like there are some guys that were really far out before the season. You know, one of them also, I'll bring it up, even though we're talking SEC, Dustin and I talked about it yesterday, but Jaron Cave-Sangopulitelli, the starting quarterback for the Cal Golden Bears, really good. I think NFL caliber guy who's now in a program that is investing in themselves. He's about 80-1 too, but Gunner Stockton and JKS are two for sure that I think are worth looking at for the Heisman. But I like Gunner and the Georgia Bulldogs this year.
Yeah, really good stuff. Texas and Georgia by the odds going to be the two dogs out in front, and then we'll see what happens after that. Speaking of conglomerate, it feels like it's pretty packed atop the Mountain West as far as who can win the conference championship here. I know you're writing that up for our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. JBT, set the stage for us. Is it indeed a couple of these teams all grouped together that have an equal chance, or do you think there's a leader or two amongst the Big Four?
Yeah, so the conglomerate that you're talking about, from an odds perspective, New Mexico, UNLV, and North Dakota State are the three teams at the top at this point right now that, from an odds perspective, would tell you those are your most likely champions. But I do think I'll make a reference that maybe you guys don't get, none of our audience will get for the most part. But, you know, when you played Super Smash Brothers and you were about to unlock a new character and they said a new foe appears and it would give you like the black, you know, the black outline, you wouldn't know. So you have to go and fight him to unlock him. I think you're going to get that here. A new foe is appearing and it's in the shape of the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors logo. I think Hawaii is going to be a very, very good team. So there's a couple of things, right? First off, Mike Alahato, their young quarterback, if you guys remember last year, got injured immediately at the start of the year against Stanford, was dealing with his ankle injury that never really healed, and still put together a season in which he completed 66% of his passes, had a well positive, I think it was 24-8 touchdown interception ratio. The kid was absolutely fantastic. So we're going to assume with better health that he's going to be even better. And go back to his last 2 years. I wrote about this in the guide at Bishop Gorman. He was never a dual threat quarterback in high school, but he still amassed over 600 yards and nearly 10 touchdowns on the ground in his last 2 years in high school. He can at least add some more. So I think that with a healthy ankle now, he's going to add a little bit more duality to his game too. So that's really going to help. But the big thing for Hawaii, guys, the schedule makers did them a ton of favors. All of the big boys, all of them have to go to Hawaii, New Mexico, UNLV, North Dakota State, all make the trip out to the island to go and face them. That is really beneficial from a schedule standpoint for a team that I think is greatly improved and has improved under Timmy Chang every year. You can get them about 6-1 to win the Mountain West. And for me, that is a value play on Hawaii. I think their odds should be much more on par with some of their counterparts at the top, like New Mexico, UNLV, and North Dakota State.
Check them out. Weekdays right here in the network, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Money moves here. Jonathan, what's the workout regime like these days? Because you look, if people are watching here on FanDuel Sports Network, YouTube TV, they definitely notice that the shape is much different these days.
Thank you very much. We've really incorporated running. Chris, Stormy's husband, and I have been running quite a bit, but you know, at least 3 miles in the morning, maybe a little bit more, trying to get ready. So, you know, you got to run every single day, boys.
My goodness. Between you and Greg Peterson, there's going to be a running challenge at this network, and I'm not going to be a part of it. JVT, great stuff. As always, check out Pods to the Future as well with Mitch Moss. More on those SEC media days. Are they really going to secede? We'll talk about it next right here. Peace and bye.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Winner Circle Proxy and VSiN are giving away two incredible prize packages. They're going to put two lucky fans into the world's biggest football contest absolutely free of charge. One winner is going to receive a $1,000 entry into Circa Survivor, and another one's going to win a $1,000 entry into Circa Millions. So both winners will receive a full-season Winner's Circle proxy service, a VSiN studio tour to be determined, and a free month of VSiN Pro. Enter by Sunday, August 2nd for your chance to win. Visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN to enter today. That is winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. Enjoy that conversation, as we always do, with Jonathan Von Tobel. Please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. You can listen to this show on your time. It's kind of cool getting some of those tweets yesterday from people catching up on our show later on in the day. So we do encourage you. We know our schedule can't be your schedule all the time out there. People listen when you get the chance. If you've been listening to those SEC media days, I don't know how much you've really gleaned from a, say, handicapping side, Jensen. This does feel like when you watch these coaches come out, though, it's their dog and pony show, right? This is their time to kind of go out there. And it does feel like a sales job, doesn't it? Do you get that sense from these head coaches when they're out there? They're giving you their resume and trying to tell some future kids out there why you want to go to their program.
Always feels like a tailor's Super Bowl, you know, one of those places where, hey, we can fit you for a suit. And this is that one time where you want to be suited and booted in front of the entire conference media landscape there. Let's kind of look at where we are in the teams that'll be going today, Dave. And I know we're going to talk a lot of Alabama, a little bit of Ole Miss that we did yesterday. And also thinking about year one for John Sumrall for the Florida Gators. But let me get with you on Alabama first, because when we kind of discussed SEC Media Days yesterday, we were thinking, okay, is it going to be four teams in a 16-team playoff, 12-team playoff, however you want to look at it moving forward? Four of the 12 would feel pretty good, and I think Greg Sankey would be happy with that. Now, getting to that four is going to be pretty intriguing, and you are Kalen DeBoer in year three. You are still under the vast shadow of Nick Saban. As I look at where they are this year, losing Ty Simpson to the NFL, they had a big transfer. Isaiah Horton ends up going over to Texas A&M, but the defense comes back with some significant pieces. They have a pretty solid secondary there. I'm very much interested in your thoughts on the quarterback room, because again, this is where we usually begin our handicap, not only in the NFL, but when you have change in, especially in the SEC, we talked a lot about with Vanderbilt yesterday, you go from Diego Pavia to probably Jared Curtis, who's going to be a freshman. Is that where you start with the Crimson Tide? Just if you can compete, you're going to have a defense, but man, when the trigger man is experienced and has opportunities to make plays, both with the arm and the feet, it really changes the dynamic.
Yeah, here's my thing, and you know that I like this program under Kalen DeBoer, and I know it's been a little bit underwhelming so far, and I can't believe it's already year three past Nick Saban. I mean, time flies, right? And I do wonder if the faithful down there in Tuscaloosa, if they're going to start getting restless, if right now, in the odds market at least, they feel like the outside looking in for the big boys of the SEC. Like, that can't be, Jensen, right? That cannot be. You can't be north of 8-1 to win the conference. You can't be plus money to make the college football playoff. That's what they are today. Plus $1.54 to make the college football playoff, even with the expansion. 25-1 to win the national championship. The point is, you just would never have gotten those numbers under Nick Saban because of Nick Saban, that you would trust that no matter who's in that quarterback room, that you know that defense is going to be solid, because that's the way they recruit under Nick Saban. Now, under DeBoer, you would say, well, the offense, I shouldn't have to worry about that side of the ball. That's why he was brought there, right? Nick was always about defense first, defense first, defense first. Ironically, it does feel like the defense has held up here in years one and two under DeBoer, and we talked about this yesterday in the program, how much talent they have defensively. Are my concerns really with the offense? They may be. And I know we talked about the offensive line. They could not run the football last year, and yet somehow they still won a game in the college football playoff. I'm still kind of shocked I cashed some of those tickets against Oklahoma. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. I might have to go back and rewatch that a little bit, Jensen, to make sure it wasn't a mirage. But I think that's what I'm getting at now with Kalen. I need to be able in the betting market to trust you the way I think we already trust Lane at LSU. Say whatever you want about a guy like Lane Kiffin, and people are going to say a lot. But like, if I made you bet a program now, it's kind of not sight unseen because we've seen what Lane has done everywhere he's gone. But DeBoer in year three, Jensen, something seemed missing. Even by winning a game in the college football playoff, they looked, I don't want to say non-competitive against Indiana, but I was really disappointed as somebody that had some Alabama tickets plus seven that day. I'm not going to forget that. And you go up 7-0, and you think, all right, you can get back to kind of being physical. And that physicality seems to be lacking, Jensen. And that's why I'm a little bit off on this team going into it this year, because I don't know that I can trust that offense with DeBoer and say, yeah, don't worry about the quarterback room. That's what DeBoer does, and he figures it out. Did it at Washington to an elite level, as we saw there back in the day, Michael Penix and the like. I hope I could trust that with the pedigree, but I don't know that I can if I'm being perfectly honest with you here today.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's also part of the handicap now in year one of John Sumrall making the big jump here to the big boys with him becoming the head coach at Florida. Boy, we thought Billy Napier in the 4-8 season and that schedule was brutal last year. Here's what Florida has this year, Dave: at Auburn, at Texas, at Missouri, at Kentucky, at Florida State, home against Ole Miss, home against Oklahoma, the neutral game. And for people who tuned in yesterday, world's largest outdoor cocktail party because of the renovations there in Jacksonville, that will be in Atlanta. So Florida, Georgia in Atlanta this year. God, if you get to 500 or better in year one for John Sumrall, I think that would be huge. Expectations for you on where we would see it. Because I actually think what's unique is if you're looking at Florida, I think they're going to have some of the better personnel. There's a lot of transfers in their OC, Buster Faulkner, who came over from Georgia Tech. He did bring a couple of big guys over with him, including the quarterback and Aaron Filo, as well as a battle that will probably ensue between Jermell Jones Jr. and Aaron Filo. I think the offensive line is probably the biggest question mark as you look at them because of a lot of attrition there. But clearly the culture and the energy shift is way different. Dave, we had this conversation. There are some places in college football where you don't get a runway. You better hit it from day one. And Florida, particularly Gainesville, if you don't win right away, and I mean like year one, year two, you go home. Like, they ain't going to wait around. That is one donor base that is, it better be winning immediately or we are not satisfied.
Yeah, you know, it's been a long time since Herb. Right when Urban Meyer was there and you win a national championships, and it's looked different since those days. Even go back to the Steve Spurrier days when they were winning titles there. And again, I know they want those glory days to come back to Florida and come back to the Swamp. I'll say this, and I know some people down there, and certainly one of my best buds, Chris Seibert, who told me about Billy Napier, like, it's a really good coach. Like, they got rid of a really good coach, but you kind of understood why they had to get rid of that coach, because it kind of had run its course there. So maybe all of that wasn't at the feet of a guy like Billy Napier, but you had to make that change. So you're going to bring in the Tulane guy, and you're going to get that offense going, you would think, right away. And that really was the problem with Billy Napier, was figuring out a way. That defense looked pretty good at most times, but the offense was the problem. And again, when you're talking about Spurrier and talking about Urban Meyer and you're talking about the glory days, you never worried about the offenses of those football teams, right? You never did. So that's what you're hoping Sumrall can do coming in right away here in year one, is at least make that offense kind of look proficient in year one. If he does that, Jensen, I think he'll get a little bit of a runway there. But you're right, that faithful, they're demanding. That's why they make these changes down in the Swamp. And again, we talked about it with Bama, kind of, you know, if they're not in the top four, where is Florida now in this equation? And by the way, I wanted to ask you quickly about Pete Golding at Ole Miss, now taking over for Lane, because there's going to be so much talk, and we're going to talk so much about Lane and LSU and their expectations. What about Ole Miss? And I know it looked really good in the short term, but now I wonder if that is translatable and that he really is, because he does feel like the right guy to replace Lane, and then they've kind of had their tit for tats out there, and you know, you got to win those recruiting wars now. You were buds, and now all of a sudden we're going head to head against each other. That's a very different dynamic.
We had Cole Thompson on yesterday for the SEC Unfiltered podcast, and I thought he nailed it. You have arguably the best quarterback in the country that's coming back. Ooh. And as experienced as he is. He don't have to worry about class anymore, Dave. Not that many of them do. And then you have Kawan Lacy. That's as dynamic a backfield as you're going to have just from running the football, let alone the bazooka that Trinidad Chambliss has. And he showed us a lot already, given what they did into the college football playoff and into the semifinal. I love the over 7.5 as far as the win total. I know it's pretty juiced. And I would even look, you and I were being creative yesterday. Might have a little Ole Miss parlay with a Scottie Scheffler top five at the 3M to get that college football playoff make price up. Excited to do some cross-board parlays with you coming up the next several weeks.
I don't know what it is about these coaches at LSU and certainly Ole Miss, but I like Golding and I still like Lane. I know he's so polarizing. I think it's good for the SEC. Let's talk more about what we saw in Major League Baseball and more football talk right now.